This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasuthi. The Taman Negara is the largest protected area of evergreen rainforest in the country, spanning over 4,000 square kilometres. The rainforest here is one of the oldest in the world, and Taman Negara itself turned 75 years old this year. Recently, the Department of Wildlife and National Parks, Perhelitan, has launched a five-year programme to reinvigorate the operations of the protected area. Here to tell us about the Taman Negara, our protected areas, and the protected areas financing projects are Dr. Sivanandan Elugupile. He's a National Project Director, Director of Ex Situ Conservation at Perhelitan, also from the Department of Wildlife and National Parks. Ms. Gan Pek Chuan, who is a Program Manager at the Energy and Environment Cluster, UNDP Enhancing Malaysia's Protected Areas. And Justin Vez, of course, welcome back, Justin, Communications Officer at the UNDP. Welcome to the show, all of you today. Welcome. How are you today?
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Thank you for having us.
Yes, 75 years of Taman Negara, Dr. Siva. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I didn't realize it has been such a long time.
75 years in our lifespan, but in ecologically, it's counting. It's a small part.
It is nothing.
130 million years, the rainforest. And it has been surviving for 75 years. Hopefully, it will survive for millions of years to come.
Of course, fingers crossed, right?
Our souls will be here too.
Our future generation, really, is dependent on this. But would you like to go back 75 years? What was the story behind Taman Negara? Do we know? How did we decide to designate it as a forest reserve? And how did that come to be?
Of course, the whole country was practically forested. So we had development coming in just to cut the story short. Forests were cleared for plantations, railways and so on, and there were some wise people who thought that we are damaging the ecosystem at an alarming rate, so they would like to keep parts of the country intact. So there was a big debate. In fact, there was a commission formed under the British government and was passed by the British Parliament. There was a commissioner appointed. And they decided that maybe one big tract of rainforest can take care of all the issues for the country, you know. So they decided on a big park, which is in a way was good. So the park was created after some time.
4,000 square kilometres?
4,000 square kilometres. But we know in wildlife ecology that you can't put all the wildlife in one big park. You have to manage somehow or other where they are.
Which makes me wonder what happened from then and now. We didn't have any more wise people to come up with more forest reserves.
Yeah, we
like
had
Taman
a few other smaller ones, but not as big as that. You know? Yeah. No, we can't afford to have probably that big. But I think now we have come up with a different system. Maybe we can talk about it.
Great.
Also.
We'll come back and find out. But what were the initiatives of the park when it was founded?
One is you need to manage the park. You know? So the rangers, one of the first batch of people who were placed there were wildlife rangers and also a superintendent who happened to be colonial expatriates who came all the way, sailed here, drove all the way to the park, and they found they have to sail in a small boat 6 hours to the park.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an experience then putting
people
in the park.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been managing quite well, and then we have a lot of small posts right to the upstream. May take 2 days to reach. So it's still there. So we have this about 10 posts all around the park. But still we need more people on the ground.
Of course. And it has have those objectives changed over the last 75 years?
One of the reasons they created the park is for the enjoyment also of the public. No? So but tourism was very low. Only after independence, probably after the 80s, when the tourism ministry came out with all this promotion, then I think I would say that the tourism thing came in a bigger scale. Prior to that, more for conservation per se.
Mm. Actually, it's quite nice on this occasion to quote from the enactment for creating the park, which it says it very elegantly with lots of big words. But the purpose of Taman Negara is to utilize the land within the park in perpetuity for the propagation, protection and preservation of indigenous flora and fauna. And I think I was chatting with people in the department yesterday, and they said the purpose of the park has not changed. That remains the number one objective.
Have we maintained the flora and fauna, and have we managed to conserve all of it?
Yeah, I think I would say less than 1% is open up for tourists.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a master plan, mm-hmm. there's a management plan which guides it. Of course, we need to update it on a regular basis and come up with new innovative things, and that's why we have this project.
Yeah. How will you continue to protect Taman Negara? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. We've lost 50% of our forest cover in the country, haven't we? We've only got about 50% left.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still clearing up land for either development or for plantation purposes. How are we going to continue to protect Taman Negara? It is a big piece of land, 4,000 square kilometres. It's a challenge for everyone, really, to, you know, keep these places intact without being touched. What do you foresee some of your challenges?
Okay, development is coming. Encroaching into the park. It's coming near to the park. In those days, all around the park was really forested. Accessibility was limited. But now you have a lot of places developed right up to the park boundary. So once you have human close by to your park, then you have all kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to have some management intervention where to keep people out of the park. So enforcing, patrolling the boundaries, patrolling the interiors. Sometimes we patrol the boundaries, interiors get neglected, and we patrol the interiors, the boundaries. So these people who also encroach and poach wildlife and harvest illegally, they are also motivated by the increasing demand.
Yeah. Are there requirements for a buffer zone for parks like this?
Yeah, we have kind of incorporated those kind of things. We don't have a law related to buffer zones per se. So what we have now is trying to link this park with the surrounding landscape. So the concept of the central forest pine corridors, linkages have come in and it's been mapped. So that has to be also be implemented. No?
Okay. So your role and function has changed over the years as well. You need
to keep these
poachers out. It's a deployment of manpower, really, you could be doing something else.
Yeah. Actually, now, if you look at it now, all these biodiversity resources are also looked at natural capital. It's increasingly being seen as a natural asset. No, it's not like something that... of course, it's invaluable in the sense that you don't want to put a value on wildlife per se, because then it becomes a tradable commodity. Mm-hmm. But it's a value. We treasure it. So there's the department's role as being seen as much more just beyond just law enforcement per se,
Of course.
Yeah.
Justin, what is the UNDP's role in all of this?
I think it's a good question for Peck Chuan to answer.
Go ahead, Peck Chuan.
Yes. The role of UNDP, as always, UNDP is the largest development agency in the UN system. We have been in 177 countries providing support such as policy and technical advice, as well as development and implementation of programs and projects, targeting innovative capacity building initiatives, try to give sound policy advice to our government counterparts, and also in terms of showing different models, innovative models in terms of balancing between socio-economic needs as well as environment protection.
What has your role been with Taman Negara?
For this Taman Negara, our role is mainly to provide a lot of policy advice in terms of how to develop a very good, effective management and business plan for Taman Negara. As you know, Taman Negara already has an existing management plan for the daily operations, but it has not really incorporated the aspect of business sense.
Oh, that's always a scary word.
No, of course. Business sense in this is not your normal money-making business sense. Mm-hmm. But this is more like how you actually mobilize resources to carry out the daily operations of Taman Negara. which in the existing management plan does not touch on. So it's more important to link how much resources require to carry out the optimum operations needed to conserve and protect the area. For example, how many staff do you need in order to do effective enforcement and patrolling operations in Taman Negara that's covering over 400,000 hectares. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, you need to also how to do different zoning within a protected area that consists of maybe, you know, protective zone, conservation zone, and also ecotourism zone.
Yeah. But how much power does the UNDP have over, you know, the operations of Taman Negara, for an example?
Of course, not in terms of authority. We are not the authority, but we are international agencies that plays a role that hopefully to work closely together with our government of Malaysia and relative authorities like federal and state governments, mm-hmm. then in order to advocate, you know, the sound policies that needs to be in place, and of course to enhance the capacity needed to implement those actions.
Do you think more can be done for Taman Negara, for the running of it?
Definitely. I mean, we do acknowledge.
In what areas?
We acknowledge that we need more people on the ground. More resources definitely is needed. You want to do research and all kind of long-term, you know, ecological research, we need more of that, the kind of capacity, you know. So, of course, the core function is enforcement. That's where we are focusing upon.
At the moment.
At the moment. Mm-hmm. And then also supporting the ecotourism. But it's restricted to just 4 entry points. And the area that is where tourists can go just... It's less than 1% of the Taman Negara. Then you have about 300 kilometers of trails and river systems, maintaining those trails, and which public don't see it.
Yep.
And I don't think any other agencies would be able to go in. So the department has to manage those resources. Huh? And also the issue of also training the locals. No? We need a lot of tourists come to the park. Then they need to be guided properly and told the story. I mean, you can come and see a tree, what tree is this,
yes.
You know? And what kind of birds they are and what kind of plants they are and how is this useful to the, you know, to the public, you know? So the stories need to be told preferably by the locals.
Yeah. Sounds like a whole load of work to be done.
It is huge.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. It's part of the park
and
management.
And so much can be done, you know,
educate. So not necessarily everything needs to be done by the government. I mean, the traditional way government is doing everything, you know, but sometimes you can't do it perfectly because you're stretching your...
Resources.
Yeah, resources. You know? So that's why we have this project. Probably we have to reach out to the community too.
Yeah. So Perhelitan has launched the Protected Area Financing Project, which is supported by, of course, UNDP, with funding from the Global Environment Facility. Now, this project runs till 2019. Justin, you want to tell me what this is about?
Yeah. So with PA Financing Project, really the long name of the project is Enhancing Effectiveness and Financial Sustainability of Protected Areas in Malaysia, which is a mouthful. So they came up with PA Financing Project, which doesn't say anything at all and makes it seem like it's about money, but it's not. The project is about the aspiration to have a world-class protected area management system. And I think people who have worked in the protected areas and conservation sector know that the kinds of protected areas in Malaysia and the way that they are set up are as diverse as the biodiversity which they were set up to protect. There are so many agencies and rules and regulations and varying abilities to enforce them. So the overarching goal of the PA Financing Project is to establish a national framework where we say that all our protected areas aspire to and achieve this basic international standard. I think that's something that all Malaysians would really, really would like to see, you know, in terms of the ability to protect biodiversity and also to handle visitors at a world-class standard. I think that's one of the aims. The other thing is, so we have 3 focal sites for demonstrating these management and business plans, and Taman Negara is the first,
yes.
But the other 2 are Royal Belum State Park and Endah Rompin. But we also have reached countrywide. Sabah and Sarawak are not excluded. The second, I think the third thing, which is especially meaningful for me, is people that work in protected areas. The project also provides a conduit for us to do the capacity building of rangers and of people that are working on the front lines, which is something which has been sorely neglected. We now know that the job of protecting protected areas is so complex and diverse. No longer do you just need a biologist and ability to work on the ground and someone who loves the outdoors. Now you need somebody who has got diplomacy, can speak three or four languages, can talk to local government, senior government, indigenous peoples, and foreign tourists.
Wow. Right?
So it's a very, very demanding role. And so we need to put priority in terms of getting that capacity up and opportunities for exposure for all our protected area managers.
How do you go about doing this? Are you introducing
one
university
thing that
courses?
We did this year, which we're so happy about, is we had a protected area managers conference. And it was the first one ever held.
We had it
at Tamanagara. And it was an opportunity to bring people together from forestry, from NGOs, from Pahilitan, far and wide.
From researchers.
And you weren't usually bringing senior officials. We were really working with frontline people. And it was an opportunity to see a very common goal and thing, rather, you know, without the divisions of department lines and our silos, to see that we all have this potential national framework, and there's so much sharing that can happen through the peer network. One of the natural outcomes of that is the protected area managers themselves have set up a Facebook group where they are originally sharing stuff. For example, the protected area manager of Mulu National Park says, okay, I have all these resources for you on signage and so on. Please download from here, here, here. So then social media allows us the opportunity to group source resources, but also to give that moral support and encouragement to people who are frustrated and, you know, deprived of support.
Yeah. What are these, what is the biggest support that's needed, actually? Is it all about funding?
That's a
big
question.
Carrying on from what Justine, from the conference too, I think there was a consensus that we need to train these people. I mean, they come from various agencies.
Sure.
Doesn't mean that they have know what's protected areas management is all about, because they're working in the various sites. No, some are very remote, and some probably with only a handful of staff, and they have to do multiple tasks. No? So we need to train these people, and then the department and the ministry has agreed that the training center that is under the Department of Wildlife and National Park to be upgraded to provide training for all these people. So it means the federal government has to put up a commitment towards this, that to upgrade this.
Of course, and as a result, remuneration comes into question as well. I mean, are we paying them enough? Is it lucrative enough for them to come into, being part of this idea?
Yeah, I think, and the other thing is that we have to show too, as the protected areas, no, managers, wildlife, and how do we project this? This is our benefit to the community, you know, and to the state governments, local governments. Of course, tourism can be one, but the many other ways that we have not shown the benefits to the wildlife, also are guardians to the forest.
Of course.
And how many tons of carbon being taken out from the atmosphere and then stored. All these things, I think there's some way you need to communicate.
Yeah. Come back and tell me. I want to know more. I mean, before you go to the local state governments, you can tell us what are the benefits of having a protected area like this. One is, of course, yes, carbon. You're right.
Yeah.
It is dispersed. It reduces our carbon emissions. I mean, it sort of helps reduce or contra off. We'll come back and find out more up next. We're discussing 75 years of Tamanagara in the studio with us, Justine Vaz, Dr. Sivanandan Elugupile, and Gunpek Chuang from UNDP. Good afternoon, and this is The Bigger Picture. Mira Sivasuthi in the studio with you. Justine Vaz from the Communications Officer at UNDP, together with Gunpek Chuang, Program Manager of Energy and Environmental Cluster for UNDP, together with Dr. Sivanandan Elugupile, who's a National Project Director, Director of XC2 Conservation at Pahilitan, Department of Wildlife and National Parks, in the studio with us. We're discussing 75 years of Tamanagara and where we're going with this reserve area. area, 4,000 square kilometres. You were saying what? 400. How many thousand hectares is that?
400,000 hectares.
That's
about a million acres.
That is
some people.
That is
like
a lot of land. It is a lot of land.
You have to say how many times the size of Singapore?
At least six times.
Six times.
Singapore.
Yeah. See. That's a country by itself, you know.
It's a country by itself, yes.
Who are your six countries?
You are. Who are your stakeholders at Prohilitan?
Okay, of course, of the three states that have contributed the land to make up this Tamanagara. They are straddling across the three states of Pahang, Kelantan, and Terengganu. The communities, you know, a lot of tourists. We receive tourists from 120 countries per year. More than 50% of the tourists are foreigners.
Compared to locals.
Yeah, half-half. 50-50. Then with the Dutch, Germans, and British, Australians taking the top. You know? But we're seeing more Asians coming in, Indians, Chinese, and also the Japanese who have been there. So it is quite popular among the tourists because of its long establishment. No? Then a lot of these tourists in industry, the guides, there's boatmen. We've got about 50 over boatmen, then guides, about 100 guides. Some are part-time, some are full-time. Some can speak 2-3 languages. No, to give one measure of, success, that some of these guys are married foreigners, and there's half the time they're spending overseas.
Mm.
In Kuala Tahan resident,
right.
I would say, you know, mm-hmm. because of the way they are so globally connected in a small village. No? So I would easily say that Kuala Tahan, 80% of the residents are some way engaged in this ecotourism activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not so.
So your stakeholders are the three states. And anyone else? Does federal government get involved at all?
Most of the funding comes from the federal government.
Okay. So is there a state-federal kind of a problem in terms of how you manage the park?
Since the park has been designated so long ago, so not much of an issue in the sense that our country, we have federal and state. But to get new parks, that's going to be an issue in the sense. It's not an issue, I would say. It's got this. We have to go through this state and federal
tussle.
And the constitution allows the state governments to create their own state parks. So that's what many of the states are doing. Why don't we do it ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe it's a time to support those kind of initiatives. But they have to do it in a... there's a certain criteria and standards that has to be followed.
Yeah.
I think that's why this project is...
Correct.
To assist the states.
How much funds are we talking about here?
The funds from Global Environment Facilities is $5.6 million. But of course, there's also a huge co-financing from the government of Malaysia, coming from federal government as well as from the state government from Johor, Perak, Pahang. These amounts to about $12.4 million. So you can see actually the ratio from the provisions of financial support from the government of Malaysia is actually more.
Much more.
Much more.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, these financial sources from the government mainly comes from the development funds, which is from all the five-year Malaysia plan as well as the annual operating budget.
Who will monitor the allocation of these funds and where it's actually going?
Of course, the implementing agency, the Department of Wildlife and National Parks, as well as the executing agency, the Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment,
mm-hmm.
together with UNDP, we play a role of providing the oversight. Of course, under the project, there's also a steering committee who provides that oversight over the implementation of the project. Yes. So the project actually constantly being monitored regularly as required under all the projects supported by UNDP.
How long is this period of what is the period of this project? 5 years?
6 years. It started in 2012.
Right. And at the end of the 6 years, what are you going to sit down and do? Assess the effectiveness, see what you've actually done, and then move on from there?
Yes. Yes. In fact, the project will have, I mean, because of the length of the project, it is required for the project to undergo at least two independent evaluation conducted by independent parties. Mm-hmm. One is midterm evaluation, which will be held next year, and also one at the end of the project implementation. So these are all, this is required. The main criteria, that the area that we'll be looking into will be how much the project results has been realized at the end of the project. One is about national ownership, whether some of these policy recommendations and actions already developed with the support of the project have been actually have been taken up by the respective government agencies or even stakeholders. Not just government, in terms of whether the local communities actually engage fully.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
Who's going to be doing all of this?
Yeah. That's why we have...
Don't you think Prihilitan has enough on its plate? You have...
Of course, we are going to take this project also as an... not take advantage of it, but take the assistance from the project to increase the capacity of the department, because we have to undertake this additional task, ensuring protected areas have following certain standards. No, then we are going into this alternative financing modalities that need additional staff.
Mm-hmm.
So you need additional resources, or you need different kind of resources, expertise, and so on. So Ms. Gan, Pek Chuan mentioned about the National Steering Committee. In the National Steering Committee, the Public Service Department also sits in, the Treasury also sits in, the Economic Planning Unit. So, in one way or other, they have to also take up some of this.
Sure. But will that affect your efficiency, your autonomy,
Not necessarily. No. I think we are hoping to get more resources from the... Because some of these are... law enforcement and so on is probably mainly government-driven, but working with the communities, and some of the things we can pass on to the community, and NGOs can come in and so on. No? So not necessarily everything has to be taken on by the government per se.
Yeah, so, I think the project provides, a space that normally maybe not normally taking into a normal government process, but provide a very neutral, impartial space for different multiple stakeholders to involve to a common discourse on how to manage protected areas more effectively in this country. And of course, one of the objectives of the project is to establish sustainable financing mechanisms, because obviously most of our protected areas are not widely recognized of its important values, including not just the tangible values that you get from ecotourism or economic activities, but also intangible values. So, and how to actually integrate these intangible values into the decision-making process, especially in the development planning process at the state government as well as the federal government. As you can see, while we are doing this project, we know the financing gaps. We have done one assessment for what are the financing gaps for specific protected areas. I mean, for Damanagara or all the protected areas under the Department of Wildlife and National Parks, you're looking at about at least almost 50 million ringgit Malaysia financing gaps in this country.
Wow.
Yes, there's a huge amount. And where do you mobilize the resources to overcome that gaps, which is why it's important to the project provided that opportunity for us to look at different models, not just within Malaysia, but as well as through the UNDP network. You get to see there are other working financing models just for conservation in other countries with similar economic and socio-economic backgrounds as in Malaysia. For example, I can give you an example. In China, they have eco-compensation scheme where they have federal government that gives to the provincial governments to protect an area. You also have examples where you have conservation easement in South Africa, where they involve the private owners to have some kind of agreement with the government to lease out an area of their private ownership for conservation purpose. Yeah, these are some of the innovative financing models that's available out there, and it can be applied. I mean, of course, you have to customize into Malaysia, taking into account Malaysia's situation.
Have we worked out that model yet?
Yeah, which is currently the project is working very closely. Is trying to look into the options.
Of course, the recently, Mira, the generally the main, if you look at the mass media and all that, it's the enforcement issues that get the attention. So what the ministry and the department have now worked out is that we have this Blue Ocean strategy where you're going to share resources with other agencies that are already there, then look at that additional capacity that you needed, no? So the enforcement of these three parks has been incorporated into this Blue Ocean strategy, and now we have, the government is going to launch this One Malaysia Biodiversity Enforcement Network, whereby the army would be involved in regular patrolling of the parks together with the department and the state park.
Obviously, that is your biggest challenge at the moment.
That is, yeah. So that will address some of the short-term measures, no? So this will be launched in the 29th of October. It's already started, but the launching is on 29th October, and at the same time will be the launching of the 75th anniversary of the park. So we're not going to do anything touristy part of thing. It's just to convey that enforcement, protection of the park is of top priority.
Of course. And when it comes to ecotourism versus conservation, how do you balance that? That's always a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You could do with the funds, and at the same time, you don't want too many people coming in. And
yes. I mean, I wouldn't go to the... I mean, personally, I mean, I didn't think that Taman Negara is overrun. Yeah, as long as it doesn't come close to mass tourism. But I think... I think that the issue actually is Malaysian tourists. As a Malaysian, I must acknowledge my fellow country people, we could do better. You know, I think it's very... If we did a ratio of the impact of one Malaysian tourist versus well-informed, considerate, compassionate, take your rubbish out in overseas tourists, it's possible that we are considerably bad, you know, in terms of our impact on natural settings. So then this is the larger question about how do we educate ourselves, you know, and the, promote awareness and proper behavior in natural areas.
How do you do that?
Yeah, to start, one is you have to start young, but since we do not have an environmental education program per se in school curriculum, we have integrated it into other sectors, and I think we have to do it in a local level. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, we need more local community kind of organization to do that, no? So yeah. I think that at every towns and every, you know, you need to have this environment.
But it needs to happen in the home, fundamentally.
In the home, yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Home.
It does. Parents play.
Monkey
see,
monkey do.
Yeah, so children has to be taught how to don't waste food, don't, you know, power,
you know,
water.
Going to natural areas does not mean open a can of sardines and leave it there.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Yeah
we can start with our beaches. You don't really need to go into the...
That's a horror. Yeah.
Protected areas. So 2015 budget, will that affect Perhelitan in any way?
We haven't seen that. I mean, the budget was just announced. But I would like to go back to 2014 budget, in the sense that that's when we got the Conservation Trust Fund announcement made by the Prime Minister himself, managed to, through the ministry. And we have now a $10 million initial grant for that trust fund. I think this need to be operationalized. No? So the project is working on it with the ministry to get these funds take off. No?
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, following on the annual budget, yes. You see, Malaysia, not like some countries out there, some developed countries, they do have dedicated budget for environment. For our annual budget, it's mainly on social and economic. Mm-hmm. Yes, these are the two main key focus areas for our budget allocation. But of course, in those budget allocation under these two focus areas, you do see some co-benefits of for environment protection and conservation. But we do not have a dedicated, you see, focal area for for the environment. Unlike some countries, some developed countries, they already have one.
But in comparison, it seems like we are okay. Of course, we can do a lot better. But the fact that you have a 10 million trust fund is a good sign.
Yes.
The fact that state governments have given far more than 5.6 million US dollars. How much was that number? 12, was it? 12.4 million US dollars. That's a lot of money, actually.
Yeah.
So it's a good start. At least the awareness is there. But, you know, if more of us can convince states to start protecting their forest, how should we begin, Dr. Siva?
Well, I think politicians want to see that this thing comes from the public.
Yeah.
You know? If they don't say, I want to protect the tigers, elephants, and so on, I think politicians will not put that on the priority list. So the public has to convey their interest, no, some way or other. So all these natural habitats and so on need to be protected. Is it what that's what the public wants? Or do they want more roads? It's a question between the two.
Correct.
So
I think roads that cut through forested areas.
But we're quite surprising in the sense that we have this national physical plan and those big plans that we have, which already earmarked where these roads, protected areas are. So you wouldn't have a developer trying to say, I want to put a road into your park. Wouldn't happen here unless we're really contravening that policy per se, no?
Mm-hmm.
So, but in many countries, we don't have that kind of land use plans too. So sometimes, they say you have a plan, but you cannot implement it. But I think you need a plan first. Then you try to implement the plan as much as possible, you know. So that without a plan, I mean, it's a plan not to have a plan too. But it wouldn't take you where you're going, no?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a number of plans. So implementing the plan would be the priority. I think that's where the GF assistance and the UNDP is coming in.
Yeah.
And hopefully the government and the other stakeholders would take off from there and move further on, and then we build up the capacity and the knowledge base for managing these protected areas.
So Perhelitan is going to be participating in the upcoming KL Eco Film Festival.
Yes.
That's very interesting. You want to give me more details?
Yes, okay. I mean, the celebrations of, I mean, we could do the 75th anniversary on a lavish scale, but we try to do a few meaningful things. So the exhibition at Publica, we're going to be at Greenscapes, is a mini exhibition of this mini initiative of mine called the Taman Negara History Project. Although one of my jobs is obviously to promote awareness of Taman Negara, we decided not to focus on head knowledge and work on heart knowledge. So it's a kind of like a people's history of Taman Negara, and it's actually just beginning. We are trying to get people to contribute photographs from their own albums of themselves at Taman Negara or their grandfather at Taman Negara over the past 70 years. And that goes into a virtual online exhibition, which will collate that together with anecdotes or diary entries or funny stories and so on. So that's what the Taman Negara History Project is about. Relatively inexpensive, but hopefully meaningful, and an opportunity for people to participate. So this will be held at, of course, 18th Publica from 12 to 9 p.m., 18th and 19th of October. And to make it more interesting, Mutiara Resort is contributing accommodation vouchers in their lovely resort in Taman Negara. And we've also got some gifts from the project and UNDP as well.
Fantastic. So make that date 18th and 19th of October at Publica.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much for joining me.
29th,
yes.
29, yes.
Of the, yes, all the best to Perhelitan and all of you, really.
Yes.
I mean, good stuff. At least I see Taman Negara going beyond the next 75
When was
years.
The last time you went to Taman Negara?
I've not been to Taman Negara.
There you go.
Oh, you should. You should.
Who's taken me? I will need to be educated. I don't want to do the wrong things.
Taman Negara here.
Yes.
Right.
But
you.
Yes, it's a date. Pleasure. We need to go and explore Taman Negara. Thank you all very much for joining me.
Yes.
There was Dr. Sivanandan Elugupile, National Project Director of the Director of Ex Situ Conservation at Perhelitan, Justin Vaz, Communications Officer at UNDP, and Gunpek Chuang, Program Manager, Energy and Environmental Cluster, UNDP, on enhancing Malaysia's protected areas on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.